Time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. Hey, how about this?
And aren't you excited? Yes, let's hear.
I'm very excited. The last week has been awesome. I guess we haven't recorded now for a couple weeks.
Yeah, took a week off.
But, well, to get some other stuff done. And things we've got done, for sure. You can now find us online
theculturalhall.com.
Go there.
Yes, you can.
You can also find us now on Twitter. It's at The Cultural Hall, so check that out. On Facebook, search The Cultural Hall. And
we're on iTunes.
Yeah, you can find us on iTunes. You may very well be downloading this episode and listening to it through the beauty of iTunes. So thank you for doing it.
So this is like, in reality, maybe one of our first actual, well, how would you say it? Because we've had plenty of podcasts now, but the first,
I mean, legitimate?
Legitimate? Sure, you could say that.
Realistic, professional.
Those are all good words.
Yeah, they are.
You're like
good
a
words.
Walking thesaurus over there.
I am. In fact, let me look up legitimate and find out some other words. No, it's the real deal, and I'm excited. It's an awesome energy that's gone on in the last week. If you're still listening, mm-hmm. I mean, this will probably be posted as the fourth episode on the podcast. So if you're still listening, thank you so much for sticking around.
Yes, thank you.
I went back and I listened, actually. I listened to the first episode. We're pretty funny.
You think?
No. Nah.
Because I'll be honest, I'm afraid to listen to it.
No, it's... I think... Do yourself a favor. You can find it on iTunes by searching The Cultural Hall.
So we are using that one. Because there are a few that we've decided just to skip altogether, I think.
Yeah, the original one, and then we're going to post the Kirby Hayborn one,
okay.
And also the Jenna Kim Jones.
Nice.
And then this one. So
Very cool.
Episode 4 or 8, depending on which one you're defining. I think we'll stick with 4 to not confuse people.
Right.
Cultural Hall episode 4. And how have you been? You look great today.
Thanks. You think so?
Well, normally you come in your pajamas, so yeah.
Well, I'm a working girl now,
yeah.
So I have to actually be dressed for the office. You know, then I take my little lunch break, come over here, and then I scoot back on over to work.
Oh,
so you're right. I do have to be a little bit more ready these
days. Your hair's still not done, but I appreciate what you've done with
I think
your
it's clone. Done.
Yeah, kind of.
I mean, it's a ponytail, but it's, you know... I sprayed it with some hairspray.
Yeah.
In an effort to keep it in one place.
Yeah, it's waking up at 8:40 for a 9 o'clock church. That's what that hair is. That's how I describe it.
8:30 to leave at 8:45.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That is exactly how I would describe that. And, you know, other things that are going on. My kid started back to school this week. That was pretty rad.
That is pretty rad.
So far, he hates it.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, so we're working on a whole lot of love.
Why does he hate it?
Because it's a new school.
Oh.
And so...
That is hard.
So I'm playing stepdad who has to have the positive outlook on things.
And what grade did he go into?
8th grade.
Oh, 8th. That's tough. I went to a new school in 7th grade.
Right.
It was
so
hard.
So does everyone. It's middle school.
Well, no, I mean, we moved.
Yeah.
Smart Alec.
Yeah? I loved how you didn't know how to insult me.
Jerk.
Dumb.
I had to think about it for a while. I was like, this is a Mormon podcast.
Yeah.
Be...
Who you are all the time. Is that what you were going to say? Be who you say you are.
Return with honor. You know, just be careful. What you say can't take it back.
Yeah, especially when it's recorded for people to hear.
For right.
thousands of people to hear.
Wink, right. Wink. Wait, so I have a fun story.
Yes, please.
It was last week, but we didn't record last week.
So tell me.
I went to the B.B. King concert. It was awesome. And
blues legend B.B. King, for those who don't know.
Who wouldn't know? If you don't know,
I'm just saying.
I don't know how you would not know who he is and be listening to, you know who we
podcast.
Are. Well, I'm
I
just
can't
saying,
believe you'd be listening he's... to a Mormon podcast and not know who B.B. King is. Good point. Proceed.
Okay, so I went to the B.B. King concert, which I didn't even know he was still alive when I got invited. I he's 85, and I was there. And old story, I had kissed Huey Lewis on stage a couple years back in Idaho. So
yeah,
I was telling my friends.
You tried to kiss the news but could only get Huey Lewis, right?
Right, yes, yeah. And was feeling the power of love. All these cliches.
Hey.
Yeah, haven't heard that one before. Huey Lewis, never mind, I'm not even going to go there.
Please. B.B. King.
B.B. King. So I went with some friends and I was telling them about the story of how I kissed Huey Lewis. I'm like, you should try to kiss B.B. King tonight. And all of a sudden, I had a mission. I was like, I am going to kiss B.B. King. So I went around and I talked. I left my group and I went to the front. I was asking all these security guards, trying to find someone I could talk to. One lady was really nice and pointed me to somebody else. She said, just don't tell, you know, them that I said to go talk to him. Yada, yada, long story short, talked to him. He invited me into his tour bus afterwards.
Yeah. Yes.
And I asked him for a kiss, and I got a kiss from B.B. King.
On the lips?
Yeah, but just, you know, just like a sweet kiss. Like a friend kiss.
Like, I missed you. I haven't seen you in so long.
Like, I grew up dancing to your music, and can you just give me a little, you know, friend kiss?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that how you said it? I grew up dancing to your music. Can I get a friend kiss?
No, but I did say I grew up dancing to your music, swing dancing to your music, and they took some pictures of us. I was just me and BB and then his little assistant, and we were just sitting talking, and I was telling him all about listening to his music growing up, and then he signed a couple autographs, and then I said, can I get a kiss? And he said, sure. No, none of that.
No? Good. Well, good. Yeah. On today's podcast, we're going to be joined with John Dalin, or Dalin. I'm betting Dalin.
I'm thinking Dalin.
It's D-E-H-L-I-N, and we'll go through the bother of introducing him when we actually have him on the phone with us. He's wrapping up another podcast, recording another podcast, and then he'll give us a call.
And is that his Mormon Stories podcast?
I don't know. I don't know. He said, am wrapping up another podcast, call you soon.
He has a few of them.
So we can talk to him a little bit about that.
Very cool.
So let's get into news, and I guess we'll do this kind of in a reverse order than we normally would, where... Well, this is John calling.
Sometimes
right now.
Never mind.
67 years ago, our forefathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that we are honest, true, chaste, benevolent, virtuous, and we do good to all men.
Hear, hear.
Indeed, we may say that we follow the admonition of Paul. Do you want me to stop?
No, I just wanted to see where you were going with this. All right, we're good, so let's just pick this up.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, John.
My pleasure.
And, John, our first question, there's a little bit of an argument here in this room. We're speaking with John, and I'm saying it's Dalin.
And I'm thinking it's Dalin.
I'm sorry to say that Rich is right.
Blast.
Dalin.
And
although I don't know how my ancestors actually said it, so you could be right, Lauren.
I think I talked to a couple of them, and they said Dalin. So, you know.
Sometimes the veil.
We say Dalin.
Sometimes
your great grandfather.
Sometimes the veil is so thin she's able to connect with your ancestors and find out.
And Richie's.
Yeah.
Yep. He told me most often he's wrong.
Don't you need the priesthood to do that?
Well, I might actually have. No, just kidding. I won't even go there.
Well, for those who don't know who John is, we're gonna refer to his wiki article quite a bit as far as this introduction goes, and then just get to know you, what you're doing, why people should know more about you, and let me just share this first little bit. John P. Dalin is the creator of several Mormon themed podcasts, blogs, and website. John worked for several
That's
years
right.
in various positions at Microsoft, served for a few years as the director of Open Courseware Consortium at MIT, which I don't know what that is. I know what MIT is, but I don't know what Open Courseware Consortium is, so maybe you can help us out with that. He was influential and an early participant in the Mormon blogging scene, often called the Bloggernacle, and John is currently pursuing a PhD in clinical counseling psychology from Utah State University.
That's me. You got it. That's it.
That's you. Plus a few paragraphs down, briefly dated Renee Zellweger in high school.
That is a true story.
Really?
The story is we met my freshman year in high school in Katy, Texas.
Okay.
We were very close friends all 4 years. My senior year, I brought her to a LDS New Year's Eve steak dance. She dressed up in this beautiful velvet dress. She's a very petite girl, so uh-huh. she wasn't busty. But her velvet dress just went over her, kind of showed her shoulders. We arrived, we drove 45 minutes to the dance. We show up, and they tell her she has to go home and change.
Oh,
really?
I'm like, no, you don't understand. I'm like, you don't understand. This is she's not a member. like, this will, like, destroy any ch-. And they're like, sorry, there are too many girls here who... So I had to drive her home, and she cried all the way home.
Oh, you're kidding.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, you know what's going to happen now.
That's my Renee Zellweger story.
There's going to be now an urban legend, a myth, that Renee Zellweger is LDS. That's what's going to happen now.
And you know who's going to start it? This guy right here.
And he's
me.
Pointing to himself.
No, she's probably not likely to become LDS now.
Hey, you don't know, John. I think
that's true.
That's true.
You know, people would tell you that anyone at any time, under any sort of circumstances, could certainly become an LDS person.
Yeah.
Phil Collins, Michael Jackson, Lionel Richie, they're all Mormons.
Sting,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, Sting.
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 When he came to Sundance Film Festival. So that was a true story. People were like, he's investigating now.
And Elvis will teach them on the other side. So that's...
Exactly.
So... I don't even know. We were talking for a few minutes before you called in, and I don't even know where to begin with everything, John, because, you know, anything that if you Google search Mormon and you Google search podcast, the name, you know, it's your name that comes up over and over and over again. And I don't say that to flatter you at all, because I don't believe in flattery, but it really
That's
is.
True.
Yeah, I certainly don't believe in flattery with you, huh, Lauren?
No.
And it just so let me stop gushing and let's just get into some of this stuff. You do, as we mentioned in your introduction, you do several Mormon themed podcasts. Let's talk about a couple of those.
Well, Mormon Stories was the first at mormonstories.org, and that one was set up just to explore difficult subjects that aren't, you know, people aren't comfortable exploring in Sunday school or in Priesthood Relief Society.
Like passing the sacrament, not using your right hand, that kind of stuff?
Well, that's a little bit edgy for Mormon Stories. No,
I'm just kidding. Give us an example of what you mean by edgier stuff.
So some of the topics that we'll cover are homosexuality, racism, feminism, controversial church history things, polygamy, and all these things that we cover, there's no agenda. It's not to get you out of the church. It's not to make you stay in the church. It's just people have stories, and mm-hmm. it's interesting to let people tell their stories. So, for example, I have this wonderful interview with a woman named Ann Wild. She was raised LDS, but then she converted to polygamy, and she lived as a polygamous wife for 20, 30 years. And I've got the whole video, the whole interview on video and on audio. And you can hear her tell her story of why she would do polygamy and why she loved it. And she's now the international spokeswoman for polygamy. She's been on Larry King. But that's just one example. I have, I've interviewed Spence W. Kimball's son about what it was like to be Spence W. Kimball's son, you know, the son of a Mormon prophet.
Mm-hmm.
I've interviewed authors on different topics. I've interviewed Richard Bushman, who is a patriarch and a stake president, but also the world's leading scholar on Joseph Smith, and he talks about all the hard things about Joseph Smith, and we just face it head on. I've also interviewed apostates, people who have been excommunicated from the church, and just let them tell their story. And it turns out that these aren't just evil people, but these are people who have stories and good reasons behind why they've done the things they do. So that's Mormon Stories.
Well, John, let me ask you this about for a while you stopped doing Mormon Stories, is that right?
You know, I've stopped and started it a few times. Yep.
And the reason being, at least the way that it's described online, is that you had some difficulty as far as coming to grips with people saying, hey, you know what, the things that you brought up are things that I can't get over and I've left the church? Or what? Why the stop and start?
Yeah, the first time I stopped it was because of that exact reason. I realized that simply by, you know, I don't create this content. Like, I didn't create the Journal Discourses.
Sure.
I didn't create the Book of Mormon. I didn't create
Wait, you didn't create the
know,
Book of Mormon.
I know. No, I didn't. And these are the things, you know, we never talk about anti-Mormon.
Sorry, go ahead. Right.
No, it's good. We never talk about, quote, anti-Mormon literature, but we do talk about things that are in, you know, church publications mm-hmm. and things that are in Mormon doctrine. And so what was hard for me at first was that I realized that just by exposing people to things Joseph Smith did or said, just by exposing people to things, you know, like, for example, most people don't, most Mormons do not know that Joseph Smith ordained black men to the priesthood. They just don't know it. But yeah. It's a fact. I didn't create it, but it's a fact. He ordained several black men to the priesthood. It was Brigham Young who decided as a matter of church policy to no longer allow black men to be ordained. There was even a black general authority in the early days of the church. His name was Elijah Abel.
That's right.
But I realized that just by telling someone something like that, all of a sudden they're like, what? Then why were blacks not given the priesthood? Oh, the church has been lying to me. It must not be true. And then they would, you know, sometimes leave the church. Rarely, but sometimes. And my early stoppage of Mormon stories was just feeling guilt and sadness that I would have anything to do with that. But I quickly learned that, you know, the internet is there. Google is there. And if I'm not doing a podcast, people are going to stumble on this stuff with or without me, and it's not my fault, per se, if they leave the church any more than it is the fault for Brigham Young that people leave the church when they stumble on things he said about blood atonement or, you know, the Adam God theory. And so that was the first time. The second time, I started having my own crisis of faith, and I started feeling like I was tempted to stray from my objectivity and start really pushing people in a direction outside the church, and I realized that I didn't want to do that either. So that's the second time I stopped. Now I'm kind of at this happy equilibrium where I honestly, I'm not trying to push people out of the church. I'm not trying to convince people to stay. I just want there to be an open, healthy dialogue where people have all the cards, they know the information, and then they can make informed decisions for themselves. And I'm even willing to say, you want to stay in the church? Here's some role models and some resources to help you. Oh, you want to leave the church? Well, there are healthy and unhealthy ways to do that too. And here are some ways you can, you know, go about that if that's what you want.
Absolutely.
So that's where I am now.
You know, I love that what you said, because being I served my mission in Kirtland, the Kirtland area, as did Richie.
Oh, cool.
And we didn't have a choice but to study church history. And I find myself so appreciative of LDS people who publish the history, opposed to people that are completely, you know, against Mormonism and putting it in the worst light possible. I think we need many people like yourself saying, look, this is what happened, but, you know, I still have a testimony. It might be a little different than somebody else's, but I'm a Mormon, and this is what happened, and this is, you know, being having it put in a better light than what some people might online. And that I really appreciate.
Yeah, and I think most people like the fact that in our on our podcasts, we're not anti or apologetic. We're just trying to be honest and sincere and objective and allow people to trust to make their own decisions.
Let me ask you, John. So there's Mormon Stories, but additionally there is what other podcasts do you have?
Okay. A second one is called Mormon Matters. My good buddy Dan Witherspoon has kind of taken that over. It's basically just like a round table. He'll bring on, you know, a couple people who are experts in a given topic. You know, they may discuss modesty within the church. They may discuss, so they'll bring on some women who have strong feelings about that. They may discuss mental health in the church and bring on a couple psychologists. They may discuss immigration and bring on a couple experts on immigration. And they just kind of shoot the bull for an hour or two. And it's done from a faithful perspective. It very much says Mormonism's awesome. It's our culture. It's our heritage. It's meaningful to a lot of people. And let's just explore it in very intelligent, thoughtful ways. And I don't know that anything like that exists in the world. We're really intelligent, thoughtful Mormons talk about tough issues in an uplifting way. I just, you know, maybe you guys are doing that. And Mormon Matters is the place where that's happening too.
Now, John, you're oftentimes the interviewer, but you're not always being interviewed. If that's, could I say
oh,
that?
Oh yeah. I was interviewed once on Mormon Stories, and it's a 3-part series where I kind of tell my story. I had a friend interview me. But then sometimes I come on Mormon Matters and I talk, but more often they get more interesting people. I have to say, Joanna Brooks is one of the regular guests on Mormon Matters, and she's a bright light in Mormon thinking and discourse. I'm less frequently the interviewee and more the interviewer.
So I feel, both Richie and I feel very honored that you'd allow us to be interviewing you, someone who's often an interviewer. And really, I'd like to understand, we'd all like to understand a little bit more about your journey. You know, how did you come to realizing, you know, I want to put this stuff out here. I want to have, you know, a blog. I want to do podcasts where people could listen to hear all this stuff. I understand that there was a time in your life where you were unsure about your testimony, where you were having a hard time. Could you share with that a little bit?
About when I've struggled with my testimony?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, basically, I had a really tough... growing up, I was extremely devout. Never tried alcohol, never tried cigarettes, never messed around, you know, immorally, sexually, whatever. Mm-hmm. Seminary president, student body president, straight A's, scholarship to BYU. I was just hardcore devout. Never messed around or goofed up. Went on a mission, and on my mission, I had a really zealous mission president in Guatemala who really wanted lots of baptisms. And so our mission became like the second highest baptizing mission in the world, with over 700 or 800 baptisms a month, with some missionaries getting 40 or 50 baptisms in a month. And it just wasn't doing things the right way. A lot of children, a lot of people who were just convinced they were poor. And it just, it really rocked my world, because it was kind of the whole mission was doing these types of things. And I just couldn't believe my eyes or ears. So when I got back to BYU, I was kind of traumatized, but I was still believing. And I worked through that. But then when I was working for Microsoft in Seattle, I was called as a seminary teacher. And I started studying church history in depth because I was Doctrine and Covenants was what we were covering, and I wanted to be a good seminary teacher. And I started reading about all these things about Joseph Smith and early church history that I had never really been taught in my 30-plus years in the church. And it really rocked my core, because – you know, it's one thing to kind of say simple platitudes of, you know, the church is perfect, but the members aren't, or
sure,
a man can be an imperfect prophet. But some of these things are not just small deals. They're kind of big deals. And so it's pretty easy for your world to get rocked and feel like you've been lied to and deceived.
Well,
and so,
and especially when you haven't heard any of those things or even any sort of inclination towards those things ever before.
Yeah, and this is an epidemic, because people are now stumbling onto this stuff all over the place.
Right.
And so, to be honest, I had this really dark time where I felt lied to, I felt like I was angry, I didn't know what I believed, and then as soon as the church starts unraveling for you, it's very easy for the Bible to unravel, for Jesus to unravel, and even for a belief in God to unravel. And I pretty much had everything unravel, and then I just had to kind of start over. And so I've kind of built back my faith in certain things. I've left other things behind. I don't believe everything that a traditional conservative Orthodox Mormon believes, mm-hmm. but I do still believe, and I still love the church. And my podcast and these podcasts were kind of a way for me to explore and learn and develop something that was a little bit more mature. And so I'm definitely different than the average Mormon. But I also still believe and still value my Mormonism, and so I'm kind of this super progressive, liberal, unorthodox, but still happily Mormon type of person. But I see Mormon is as much a culture as it is a set of beliefs, and I'm very much culturally Mormon and still believing Mormon in some ways, I guess is the way to say it.
How did you come about the idea of the podcast? I mean, I know you said you wanted to use it as a forum, but were you sitting there and go, I got an idea, this new thing podcast that the kids are talking about? Like, how did that?
When I was at Microsoft, I spent, you know, 12, 14 years in the high-tech industry. When I left Microsoft, I came here to Logan in Utah State University, to get a PhD in something called instructional technology, which is using technology to help people learn. And one of my first classes in 2004 was on what's called Web 2.0 technology. So this is right before blogs and podcasts and wikis and Twitter and all that stuff kind of blew up on the scene. And so I was learning about podcasts right as they were being invented. So I jumped on. I knew that I wanted to help people work through difficulties in Mormonism. There was only one or two Mormon-themed podcasts at the time. None of them were really, you know, super successful. One was really anti-Mormon. And I just said, this is it, man. I'm going to do a podcast as a way to learn how to use this technology, and because I believe it's going to become really big someday. So that's how I jumped on. I started with my PhD, and I loved it so much that I left and quit my PhD program because this kind of took on its own life. And it led me to meeting with thousands of people all over the world because I got so many listeners that people started calling me, emailing me, driving to Logan to meet me. And then whenever I'd travel for MIT, I would meet with them. And there's so much pain and sadness and difficulty out there that I realized that there's a lot of joy to be had in counseling with people who are struggling. And that's when I decided to switch to a psychology PhD.
Okay, we gotta move into our second block, John. We're going to come back with you in just a couple minutes, okay?
Okay.
Now, we don't really take a break, John. We just make it sound like we take a break, and then we'll just pick
no
up
problem.
Here.
This yeah.
is
no
where
problem.
We
the bell
it.
Rings, and we're
yeah.
into that second block.
Yeah.
Does your Utah business need help navigating the social media landscape? Contact Moz Concepts for help developing Facebook applications, custom websites, and building your social media fan base. Visit Moz Concepts online at mozconcepts.com. That's mozconcepts.com.
All right, and we're back with John DeLynn.
Yeah, I knew how to say it.
To be truthful, I cheated. I listened to a podcast that John
Truth comes out
that John DeLynn did with John Larson, and John Larson is the author of the Mormon Expressions podcast.
Huh. Okay.
And
right.
And I listened to them go on and on about the kind of the future of Mormon podcasts. And the thing that I was sad, and this that particular podcast was recorded what about 6 or 9 months ago, John?
Yeah, it was a while back.
And no mention of the Cultural Hall. So I guess they didn't have the foresight of this podcast coming forward. But
not prophetic.
I like how, I don't even know, the Cultural Hall. We thought we were pretty creative in getting that name. And then we realized the website was taken.
Yeah, by this very gentleman we speak to right now. And again, wanted to say thank you for making this podcast possible.
Yeah, thank you, John.
Sorry for taking so long. That was a holdout.
No,
hey,
you're,
no, it was appreciated.
You're
appreciated.
Appreciated. The word is appreciated.
Appreciated. Yeah, appreciated. There we go.
As I like to say, the podcast John is perfect. It's the people that are imperfect. So I apologize. You didn't have the foresight on the Cultural Hall there with us.
I love it.
So
I love it.
Let's get back into it a little bit. So you, where we left off is you travel around with your travels with MIT, and people were coming to Logan, and it kind of just went from there. Give me that experience. Let's pick up right there.
Yeah, so I traveled around the world and just saw so much pain and suffering around Mormon issues, whether it was people who were, you know, gay but in the closet and not out to their spouse, or eating disorders, or losing their faith or their testimony, but they couldn't tell anyone because they were worried that their spouse would leave them and take the children, or they were depressed, or addicted to pornography or whatever it is. There's just so much pain out there, and sometimes in our culture, maybe something we're not always good at is talking about the difficult things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just realized that I'm going to spend the rest of my life, and I'm literally going to spend the next 30 or 40 years, if I get it, helping to decrease the pain in Mormonism that comes from not talking about difficult things.
Now, I love that. This goes on to, you are also the co-founder of Mormons for Marriage website, a pro-gay marriage site, as well as Stay LDS, a community, it says, dedicated to helping unorthodox Mormons stay in the LDS church. Is this coming from that mentality, these ideas?
Totally. So there's a lot of similarity. My PhD dissertation is going to be on being gay and Mormon.
Hmm.
5%, let's just say 5% of all Mormons are gay. If you count parents of gay children, siblings of gay people, children of gay people, and then friends of gay people, you've got 20, 30, 40, 50, maybe even 80% of Mormonism that is going to be affected by this issue.
Sure.
More and more people are coming out, and it's a problem. Science is telling us that most of these people don't choose to be gay. The surveys that I'm conducting, it's really, really clear that these people are not gay for the stereotypical reasons of being molested or being perverted or choosing that lifestyle. Most of these people are moral throughout their high school years. They serve missions. They go to BYU and they date heterosexually. They pray and fast to have it be taken away. And it just doesn't go away. They don't choose it, and it doesn't go away. And they're left with either three options. Be celibate for the rest of your life, which I think would be a terrible option for any of us who are heterosexual to contemplate.
Sure.
The second is marry heterosexually, and we've seen that time and time again blow up. Can mm-hmm. you imagine being married to a gay person who didn't find you attractive?
Right.
Can you imagine having to have sex with someone who you're not attracted to? It's a disaster, and it blows up all over the place. And then the third option is they have to leave the religion that they love. And that's terrible. So there are no good options there. And that's why Utah maybe has the highest suicide rate of young men between the ages of 18 and 25 is because there's no good options for these people right now. And it's same with faith crises. People aren't choosing to learn about Joseph Smith. They're Googling Joseph Smith as they're preparing their Sunday school lessons. And all of a sudden it's saying that he has had 34 wives and married women who were married to other men, and some of them were 14 years old. And they're like, nobody ever told me this.
Yeah, where was this?
And yeah, this wasn't.
When I was a sunbeam, they didn't go over this stuff.
Where's the primary song on Joseph's 34 wives?
Yeah. Although you have to admit, John, that'd be a pretty awesome song.
Oh my God.
Joseph's 34 wives. I'm one,
Emma,
too.
And,
yeah, you start.
Emma and Eliza and.
And you could have the hand
Vaughn.
Actions. Have the.
Have I the, wanted to play Emma. I wanted to play Emma.
That would be a good primary program for sacrament meeting, wouldn't it?
Or maybe just a new musical.
Yeah, I'll work on it.
Okay.
But anyway, these are tough issues. They're not talked about enough. But mm-hmm. we can either hide our heads in the sand and have them smack us later in life, or we can start talking about them and finding ways to deal with them in a healthy way. You know?
Absolutely.
Do you find people that respond to your podcast and also to your sites, do you find that the majority of the people say, hey, thanks for enlightening me, peace out, I'm gone? Or do you find that most people go, man, thank you so much for bringing these things to light. Now I'm able to deal with them and I'm working through them and I find it comforting in the words that you say? Or would you say it's a fair split between, or do they tend to lean one way or the other?
It's kind of beautiful in that there's so much variety. Mm-hmm. You know, I created StayLDS to encourage people, StayLDS.com, to encourage people to stay in the church, and that helped a lot of people stay, thousands of people. There are also several who ended up leaving, and then I got really discouraged, like, oh my gosh, they can't leave. But some people leave the church and are really happy, like, let's say they were abused, let's say that something really bad happened to them. Some people, I hate to say it, find joy and fulfillment when they leave. But I also found that there's lots of people who get angry, resign, and leave the church, and then they come back and they ask to be rebaptized. And there's just such a huge variety of what happens. One thing that's for sure, once you're Mormon, you're always Mormon. And when I say Mormon, I mean the hymns, the prayers, your spiritual language. You can't just turn that off. So even if you're a hardcore atheist, even if you will never set foot in a chapel again, you hear "Come, come, ye saints," and the hair is likely to still stand up on your arms.
Mm-hmm.
And so, one thing I try and do is just define Mormonism a little bit more broadly. You know, some are in, some are out of the church, some are Orthodox, some are liberal. It doesn't matter. There's a culture, just like in Judaism, that we're all a part of. And you know, a secular Jew can still appreciate Fiddler on the Roof. And, secular unorthodox Mormon can still appreciate Mormonism and find value in it. And the less we're drawing lines and the more we allow for a variety, I think, is a healthier thing. So I create StayLDS. I create LDSHomosexuality.com. I create lots of different venues for people so that wherever you are or find yourself, you can find a place in Mormonism where you can feel comfortable.
You know, I've often said that even in some respects, just living in the state of Utah, you're a little bit Mormon.
Absolutely.
Regardless of, you know, going along that same theory is that you know that Monday night is family home evening night, and that's why there's, you know, that going on. And you know the best day to go skiing is Sunday. And you know, when someone says,
yeah.
When someone says Heavenly Father, you're like, Mormon?
Totally. Or, you know, just being defined, you're either active, anti, or Jack.
You know? Exactly.
You're one of the three. Pick one.
Or the people.
Yeah, and we need a broader variety.
We do.
Need a bigger tent. We need a way bigger tent.
I agree with that. Yeah, well said.
Yeah.
I haven't visited stayLDS.com. I was going to pull it up, but I didn't want to mess up our recording. Is it just a picture?
I checked it out.
Is it just a picture of someone wagging their finger going, "Stay LDS"? Stay.
No, it's visually it's very boring. We just grabbed some generic WordPress theme that has a mountain. What's powerful about Stay LDS? There's an essay on there that I wrote a couple years ago called "How to Stay in the Church After a Crisis of Faith."
Mm-hmm.
It's like a 100-page essay giving people who are struggling with their church 1,000 tips and tricks on how to stay Mormon even when you don't believe like you used to. You know,
Yeah. The
problem with binary black and white thinking is if you give people the option of in or out, if they can't make a few things work, then what do they choose? They choose out. And so one of the biggest assets is this essay, which helps people say, no, it doesn't have to be in or out. You can be in, but you can be in on your own terms. You don't have to believe everything. You don't believe everything, but you can still stay engaged. And the secret is everybody's a buffet or cafeteria Mormon. We just don't admit it. And what this essay does is it kind of gives people permission to own their Mormonism in a way that works. The second thing that's most valuable about Stay LDS is a forum. If you go to stayLDS.com/forum, there's this really vibrant community of people who just go up. If you're struggling, you go up and you ask a question. And then literally 100 of the most sensitive, brilliant, thoughtful Mormons that I know will answer your questions and help you deal with things like, how do I keep my temple recommend when I still struggle with some beliefs? How do I keep my marriage together when my wife believes, but I don't necessarily believe everything?
Mm-hmm.
And there are just all these like internet counselors that will come and counsel you and help you find a place. So that's what Stay LDS is about.
And what has the feedback been, or what have you, you know, what have people been saying about it since, you know, since it's been launched? And have you seen a lot of benefits, people saying, hey, thanks, you know, I stayed in the church because of this website? Or what have you seen?
Yeah, two things. Thousands of people stay in the church and are really grateful that they didn't have to choose. They no longer had to choose between integrity and their faith. They could find a way to have integrity and stay in the faith, and they didn't have to ostracize themselves from their families and their communities. But a second set of feedback, and this is hard for people to hear, but it's just reality. For some people, staying is not going to work. You know, if you actually look at statistics worldwide, the church has about a 30 to 40% activity rate. In other words, 60 to 70% of all people who are baptized Mormon leave the church or go inactive. And that's just reality. And so there are lots of people who try to make it work, and ultimately they say, I don't believe it. It's not credible to me. It's not healthy for me. It's not spiritual for me. It's boring for me, whatever their reasons are. And they end up leaving. And even the Stay LDS path just doesn't work for them. And we just have to accept the fact that for those of us who stay in the church, it's a wonderful thing. And some people need to leave. We need to stop ostracizing them and condemning them and labeling them. We need to love them and validate their path.
Mm-hmm.
And if we want to entice them back, do it by showing that we can have a lot of joy, not by, you know, denouncing them and calling them names, you know.
And really just getting away from this all or nothing mentality or black and white mentality, and really realizing people can find this middle ground and be content with the middle ground.
Yeah, and it's something that's a foreign to Mormonism, but it's so common in other religions, in Catholicism, mm-hmm. and Judaism. You can have a Jew who doesn't believe in God, but you wouldn't dare say you're not Jewish. He's like, I'm a Jew, and I don't even think Moses ever really parted the Red Sea, and he's still a Jew. That allows for a lot of flexibility, and Catholics are the same way. How many Catholics do you know who use birth control and think the Pope is full of crap, and they're still a Catholic? You know, the world's full of them.
Sure.
And Mormonism needs that flexibility so that it can keep people, because if it doesn't, it's going to just see people abandoned by the boatload.
Let's devil's advocate this for a second, though. I think that some would say, you know what, if you're not all in, then be out. Wouldn't you think? Don't you think there's some of that attitude around where it's like, I mean, certainly as you travel back in time with the early church members, I mean, it was an all part of their life,
in or out,
or nothing, kind of in or out. You know, if you doubted it at all, you wouldn't have made the trek or have sold all of your belongings and things like that. And I think that that's fair to say about, you know, some of the mentality now.
Yeah, that's continued to the present day a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to challenge that just a tiny bit, because if you go back and read Joseph Smith, this man was expansive. He was like, bring all your truth and goodness and let's see if we can add to it.
Yeah.
He was always inviting heads of other congregations to come preach sermons in Nauvoo and in Kirtland. He embraced truth wherever he saw it, and I think this is one of the most open-minded men you may ever come across in history. And there's a strong legacy of open-mindedness and diversity in Mormonism. It's just been hidden, or it's been lost from our history books. But if you go back into the 1900s, men like B.H. Roberts and Talmage and Widstow, these were men who believed in organic evolution. These were men who were scientists who knew the Earth was millions of years old. And they were preaching a very progressive flavor of Mormonism as early as the, you know, 1910s and 20s. It wasn't until sort of a lot of these men died and Joseph Fielding Smith and Bruce R. McConkie sort of wrote these books like Doctrines of Salvation and Mormon Doctrine, where you see this really rigid, binary, closed-minded Mormonism really start creeping into our culture. And we're just victims of it in the 1960s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. But that's not the Mormonism that we inherited. The Mormonism of early Mormonism was very progressive, open-minded, science-loving. It was very feminist. You'll find that Mormon women were some of the leaders in the suffrage movement, in the women's voting movement, mm-hmm. in the late 1800s. We were very progressive. In fact, you'll find that Joseph Smith was, like I said, loved blacks, ordaining blacks to the priesthood. He was opposed to slavery in some ways. And you'll even find that women were performing certain ordinances that were related to the priesthood, like healing the sick and other types of ordinances in the 1800s. And we've actually moved more conservative in many ways if you read our history. And so that's kind of what's refreshing, is that in some ways this progressive, open-minded thinking is getting back to our roots of Mormonism. We just have forgotten what a rich intellectual heritage we've inherited because of this dark days of correlation and of orthodoxy that sort of Joseph Fielding Smith and Bruce R. McConkie gave to us in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Hmm. So do you feel like do you feel like we are on our way back to our roots then, if you think of the history?
Absolutely.
You do. You see us going that direction.
Just think about it. In 1940 or 50, a woman named Fawn Brody, who is David O. McKay's niece, published a book on Joseph Smith called Rough Stone Rolling, No Man Knows My History. She was excommunicated for publishing that book. Fast forward to the year 2000, whatever, a man named Richard Bushman publishes a book on Joseph Smith, has almost everything that Fawn Brody had in her book, and in his case, it was sold at Deseret Book. It was promoted. Mm-hmm. I remember going to Deseret Book and seeing mountains of Rough Stone Rolling books in Deseret Book. We've got the Joseph Smith Papers Project. We've got this new book on the Mountain Meadows Massacre that the church has put out. Some say a huge testimony to the progress of the church is that they've never punished me. They've never excommunicated me. They've never disfellowshipped me. And here I am blabbing about all sorts of difficult things all over the internet with tens of thousands of listeners. And so I think the church has totally learned its lesson. It's stopped excommunicating liberals and intellectuals. Mm-hmm. And it's starting to own its history and realize that it needs to change. Even on the issue of homosexuality, it used to be that the church, that it told people to just be quiet or just get married or forget about it, and it condemned even the feelings. And now the church has said, we don't know why people are gay. It's not a sin to have gay feelings. And you know, they've really come a long way in becoming more tolerant. And even in New York, in California, when they tried to legalize gay marriage, the church fought it. In New York, the members there didn't hear a peep as New York marched on to legalize gay marriage. And so, yeah, I think the church is totally making fantastic strides at being progressive.
Let me, where do I even go with this? So, you know, I'm born and raised within
I've
the
left you speechless. I know. I've left you speechless.
Well, that's hard to do with Richie, too.
Isn't that
that's
hard?
Really hard. Yeah.
Been born and raised in the church and you know, been believing. Certainly have had times where I've been, you know, questioning things. And as Lauren mentioned, you know, having the opportunity to serve in Kirtland, I became pretty fascinated with early church history. I guess the struggle that I have into learning more about it is trusting the resources. I'm not one to look a whole ton at anti literature. I have my own feelings as to why people put that out and what that's all about. But you mentioned the book from the 40s. You mentioned some of these other references that you're saying, and this happened, and this. Where is the best place to get those?
The original information? Sources.
Yeah, the original sources, not tainted by anyone.
The accurate sources.
That kind of thing.
It's a good question. I have the same question.
Well, that's a great question. Man, there are so many cool resources available. And I'll just have to say, very little anti-Mormon literature really exists. That's kind of a bit of a misnomer, because let's just take the worst stuff, like Gerald and Sandra Tanner, the Tanners, and the Lighthouse Ministry. Those people are top-rate historians, and when they publish a book that you would, quote, call anti-Mormon literature, they're not like citing sources of people that had an axe to grind. All you have to do is go to the Journal of Discourses or early church newspapers or the Book of Mormon itself to find things that are going to be troubling if your mind is open. So, for example, Section 132 of the Doctrine and Covenants is still in our Doctrine and Covenants. And what does that talk about? It talks about polygamy and how polygamy is awesome, and Emma, you need to do it, and people who do polygamy are going to go to the celestial kingdom. You know, that's what it says in your Doctrine and Covenants, Section 132. Go read it. Mm-hmm. The Book of Mormon, if you go to the title page, it says this book, you know, is a record of the ancient inhabitants of America. That's what it says. And so when we're confronted with scientific data that show that the DNA, you know, of Native Americans is actually comes from Asia, not from Europe, you know, you can't, or Israel, you can't really say that's anti-Mormon. Those are just facts. That's the thing. It's like the church has published all this information. The church has acknowledged that there are multiple versions of Joseph Smith's first vision. The church has acknowledged that Joseph was a polygamist. You can go up to the church's own website, familysearch.org, and you can see how many wives Joseph had. And so, you know, we shouldn't be so worried about sources from the standpoint of you know, that these things aren't credible. The fact is that there are tough issues that are facing Mormonism. And so you need to just dig in. What are some good sources? There's a website called mormonthink.com that does a really good job of showing the tough historical issues. There's another one called fairlds.com, and that's the apologetic website that also talks about all the tough issues. So I'd say that those are two places you can go. FairLDS, is it .com or .org? Let me check real quick. It's FairLDS.org, F-A-I-R-L-D-S.org. They have a topical guide. This is created by devout active members of the church. And every difficult issue you could ever want to find there is there. It talks mm-hmm. about racism, homosexuality, gender issues, science, religion, magic and the occult, Joseph's use of peepstones, all that stuff is right there in fairlds.org. If you want another very scholarly incredible place to go. Go to mormonthink.com. And they're less of a faithful site, but they're every much a bit as accurate as Fair LDS. Those two places you can go to read stuff. There's lots of podcasts you can go to listen to stuff. Again, mormonstories.org or Mormon Matters for more neutral view. And then, you know, Mormon Expression is a podcast that does a fair job. They do an excellent job. They're very meticulous in their historical research, but they probably have a bit less of a faithful view than Mormon Stories or Mormon Matters. There are journals like Dialogue and Sunstone, Dialogue Journal or Sunstone, that have a lot of great scholarship. There are lots of blogs out there that talk about this kind of stuff, and there are some great books. So there's just a million good resources out there, and people shouldn't be afraid, because the facts are the facts, and if you just dive in, you know, you'll realize what the facts are, and then the trick is just how to deal with it. But don't be so scared about anti-Mormon literature, because the facts are the facts, and we just need to face them.
All right, coming back, we'll talk a little bit more with John about kind of where he's at now, what he sees as the future goes, and whatever else we come up with in just a minute. All right, we're back with John DeLynn. I'm still proud that I got that right. What did we bet?
Even though you cheated.
Yeah, well, anytime I win a bet with you, it's cheating, or I have to change the rules.
As long as you admit it.
Yeah, that's fine. John DeLynn, who is the creator of Mormon Stories, he used to own theculturalhall.com, but I got it from him.
Well done. That was, yeah, way to take John down. That was awesome, Ricky.
I showed John. Please, John, can we please have it?
Took me down.
Please?
Yep,
can we please?
No, yeah. You earned it. Persistence.
Well, thanks.
And, because I don't even remember how long ago was it, John, that I first contacted you, about 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah, and I held out.
Mm-hmm.
Until now, today, actually.
Yeah. Well, no, you won me over. Your charisma and charm and your
you
cuteness won me over.
You stop it, John. I'm blushing. And creator of StayLDS.com and all around. Would you characterize yourself as a Mormon intellectual? Is that how you would? If you had to label, and I'm sure you're a guy that's like, I don't prefer labels.
How cliche.
Yeah.
No, I don't think of myself as intellectual, because I'm not a reader by nature. And so I like intellectual topics, but I have so many friends who are truly brilliant and gifted that I just don't label myself that way. But that's certainly the area that I play in.
Well, can I ask then a more basic, very culturally labeled question? Are you a active Mormon? Semi-active Mormon or inactive Mormon? We all know those terms.
I'm a semi-active Mormon. I don't go to church every week, and I don't believe a bunch of things that the church teaches anymore, or at least I don't actively believe them. I don't necessarily disbelieve them. But I went to church last Sunday. My kids all, you know, go to church. My wife goes to church. And I still love it when I go, but I just don't always go.
Do they go? Do they go regularly?
They go, my children go more regularly than my wife and I do.
Okay.
But we all go with some frequency, at least once a month. And actually, by the church's technical definition, once a month is active. And so I'm active by the church's measure statistically.
That's so good to know. Once a month is active.
So you can.
Oh, this is, I had no idea.
Do you find your family, do they kind of jump on with you? Yeah, what about that? Or I have a hard time with that too. Or do you find your kids saying, yeah, but Dad?
Yeah, well, it's tricky when you have, you know, I have teenagers and a couple younger kids. But the trick is, I didn't want to lie to my children. Well, once I discovered what Joseph Smith's life was really like, what I know about the Book of Mormon and the Book of Abraham and church history, I can't hide these things from my kids. I feel like that would be deceitful. I mean, if Mormonism taught me anything, it was to be honest, and it's to be courageous and to do what is right. And so, yeah, there was this 3-4 year period where, you know, kids would come home from church and they'd say, oh, they taught us today that blacks were black because they were less valiant than pre-existence. And I'd have to say, well, honey, let's sit down and have a conversation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or, Or they'd come home and say, Joseph was innocently killed like a lamb to the slaughter. It was terrible what they did to him. And then I'd have to sit them down and say, well, there's a little bit more to the story of Joseph's martyrdom than that. And so we'd talk about it. And it was hard for a couple years to teach them that sometimes leaders get it wrong, that sometimes people teach things that are wrong at church, that most members don't have an accurate view of their own history, and that they didn't have to believe things that felt wrong to them. But over time, they got it. You know, kids don't want to believe that God is a racist. Kids don't want to believe that God hates homosexuals. Kids don't want to believe that, you know, that we should hide things that are true. And so after a while, they kind of get it. And then they're like, well, who cares? I still like going, and I still mm-hmm. feel good things when I go. And I don't have to, you know, I don't have to push my thoughts or beliefs on others. And so they can actually settle into a really nice level of activity where they don't put themselves in danger, where they don't feel like they have to believe or obey things that are wrong, but that they can still appreciate the spirituality of church, still appreciate the community, and just sort of do it in a more healthy, informed way. And I'd say my kids are really mature in their engagement with the church. And I'll tell you this, there's very little they're going to ever learn now that's going to shock them. They're going to say, my dad taught me that when I was 10.
Yeah.
Right, you know, yeah. You've got, I agree with this.
If you've got something difficult, you better bring it on, because the stuff
Absolutely.
You're saying now, I learned that from my dad when I was 10, you know?
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with that. Well, let me ask... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. No, please.
Well, I was going to say, let me ask you then, what do you say to those, you know, not just children, but adults who say, but I know and I feel safety in the fact that, you know, the church is either true or it isn't, and if it's true, then I follow the prophet, and this is doctrine, and, you know, don't take this away from me. I'm feeling safety in this, and this is what I believe, and I think that, you know, you, John, might be wrong a little bit to think, you know, more liberal, in more liberal ways. What would you say to them?
Well, I would say I understand, and if that works for you, you know, people should believe or observe religiously however they're comfortable. And as long as it's working for you, that's great. But I would say that that we live in a new era. We live in an era where people don't hide if they're gay. We live in an era where people don't cover it up. We live in an era where all you have to do is Google Joseph Smith's name, and you're going to learn things that you never understood. And once you start digging into church history, you're going to realize that things are not simple. We were taught that evolution's evil. Well, that's not the full story. It turns mm-hmm. out that apostles have believed in evolution. We were taught that birth control is wrong, yet now most Mormons practice birth control. We were taught that women should stay home and not work. Well, now in Utah, most women work and are in dual income homes. We were taught, you know, all sorts of things that, you know, we were taught that the age of the earth is 6,000 years, that Adam and Eve came on the scene 6,000 years ago, and there was no death before Adam and Eve. And the scientific record is not allowing us to maintain those beliefs. The earth is millions of years old. There were dinosaurs, and there were men and women living before 6,000 years ago. That's just fact. And, you know, we thought that all Native Americans were Lamanites, but DNA is telling us that very few of Native Americans have any DNA that resembles, you know, Europe, you know, Israelis in 600 BC. And so you can live in this world that's simplified, that's orthodox, but it's not reality. So as long as it works for you, great. But if you want to live in the 21st century, you have to learn science. You have to learn about facts. You have to learn the church history, or you're going to be either living in naivete, which is unsustainable, or you're going to have your world blown apart by reality. And then you're in a very much of a worse situation than if you just face the facts. And that's where we are now. Nothing is simple. There are no blacks and whites. Almost everything, well, that's not true. Pedophilia is probably black, you know?
Yeah.
Murder without cause is black. So there are some blacks and whites, But in reality, most of our existence is in the gray area. Most of it is in nuance. Most of it is in sophisticated complexity. And that's what living as a Mormon in the 21st century is going to become. You can't hide anymore. You just can't hide. Broadway, Book of Mormon musical, South Park, you know, The Daily Show. Mormonism is being skewered. You know, Mitt Romney, Harry Reid, you know, John Huntsman. We're in the big time now, and we just need to step up and be mature and own it, or we're going to get spanked, really.
Well said.
John, we've only got just a couple more minutes. I got one more question that I want to kind of end on. And so, again, thank you so much for joining with us everything that you did to help get the Cultural Hall rolling. You can find us online at theculturalhall.com. Here's my question, John. You talk about you know, all these different areas, there's different things that you believe in or that you don't believe in, and, you know, all that. There's everything that encompasses who you are, John, as a member of the church. But what is the one thing that you have a testimony of that helps you continue?
I have a testimony of so many things related to Mormonism. I have a testimony that life has purpose and meaning. I have a testimony that if you seek to listen to your spirit and to what God is telling you, that you will be blessed, and that powers will follow you to support the righteous endeavors that you have. I believe in the teachings of Jesus that if you love and have kindness and serve and you are compassionate and tolerant, that that will bless your lives and others. I believe in the expansiveness in Mormonism, that it's not about exclusion, that everyone has an opportunity to achieve enlightenment. I believe in the Mormon system of wards and of service and of organization and structure. We are good people. We serve. We love. We are kind. At the end of the day, families are very important. I believe in different types of families now, but I believe that families are so often the way to go. And I believe that so much that's at the core of Mormonism, which is be kind, be loving, serve others, you know, family is important. You know, that is what life's all about. And that's where clean living. I mean, I hate to say it, but I think, you know, living in a clean way where you're trying to be moral and trying to be righteous and honest and worthy, that's all just brilliantly beautiful stuff. And that's why I'll always be Mormon.
Beautiful.
John, go ahead and get up on the Rammy Umptum and tell us what it is that we should know, where we should go to learn more about you, hear you, all that stuff.
Oh, well, MormonStories.org, MormonMatters.org, StaleDS.com are three good places to start. I have a Facebook page if anyone wants to friend me, John DeLynn. You can Facebook me. A lot of good, fun activities go on there. We've got a lot of cool things coming down the pike. So stay tuned, because the cool stuff that we're going to do in the future is far more interesting than what we've done in the past.
Wonderful.
All right. Thanks for being with us, John.
Thanks, John.
All right. What an awesome time that was, being able to visit with John DeLynn.
One more time.
I know. It's a joke that never dies.
Mainly, some jokes do die, Richie. Jokes do die.
I will never bring that joke up again. How about that?
Okay.
That's my promise.
I like that.
Here, pinky. Give me your pinky right there. All right. So let's do some news real quick and let's wrap this up. That way it's current and things like that. Fort Collins, Colorado. There's some people that don't want the temple there in Fort Collins.
Thinking that it'll take their property down.
Yeah, their property value down.
Which is interesting, because I've always been taught if you want to make sure your property value will never go down, buy a home, buy a LDS temple.
Which may be the case here in Utah, but not in Colorado. We'll search into that a little bit more. But this is just a little bitty temple. The largest room in the temple in the Fort Collins, Colorado temple is only going to be able to hold 50 people. So it's not...
It is small, very small.
It's not a big one like we're used to here in the Salt Lake Valley.
It's really small, actually.
Yes.
Because, I mean, not even a cultural hall holds more people than that, doesn't it?
Yeah, way more.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's very small. Jimmer's engaged.
I know. Woo! That's what the headline said. Did you get that article?
No, I didn't.
There's a, I've got it in here. CBSSports.com. Their headline is, Jimmer Fredette is engaged, period. Woo!
Really?
Period. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, and it's actually created a lot of buzz. Like, I know that the Sacramento Bee did a whole story on how Mormons are encouraging young men to get married, and they're worried that they're not getting married at an early enough age, and they want men to be more like Jimmer. They're talking about that in Sacramento.
Be like Jimmer.
Be like Jimmer.
There's actually a whole like assignment person who's assigned to Jimmer Fredette at the Sacramento Bee.
Is there?
I've noticed a huge amount of articles coming out of there. She's cute, too. His wife.
Is she?
Yeah, have you seen
her? Well, I'm sure she is.
Yeah, look at her. She's
Jimmer.
Just itty. She's just itty bitty. Look at her.
She is itty
She's
bitty.
Teeny.
Well, how tall is Jimmer?
He's like 6.
She has a, so she looks like she was a BYU cheerleader. She's got a cheerleading uniform on.
Perfect investigation there, Lauren.
It's very cute.
Looks like she was a cheerleader.
Well, let me get my magnifying glass out and all of a sudden I can tell you a few more. They are standing in
California.
California.
I don't know that's what that is.
I thought it was maybe Provo.
Yeah, could have been.
She's cute.
Yeah,
sorry, you're trying to get this back.
Yeah, I
want to
see her again.
Hold on.
She's got to not be anything more than like 5'2".
Of course she's cute. It's Jimmer.
Well, yeah.
He's cute, and he's a good guy.
She's itty-bitty, but that rock you can see even in this terrible picture from the CBSSports.com.
The rock is bigger than she is.
It's huge.
Yeah.
It's a huge rock there. Other things, and I guess let's just wrap this out, right? Unless you've got anything big that we need to mention. They're going to build a new MTC
building. Yeah, well, new building. They're just going to knock one down.
Yeah, knock one down and then make it bigger and badder and more awesome, state-of-the-art at the MTC campus here in Provo. And by here in Provo, I mean in the state here, Provo, not where we're at.
Did you like your 3 weeks at the MTC?
No.
Yeah, nor did I.
Although one time I did, and this is a true story, because you get the big list of stuff you have to buy for the mission, and because you don't know any better, you buy everything for the list.
Uh-huh.
I had an umbrella, and it rained while I was there, and I went out and did Singing in the Rain. I'm singing in the rain, and I did it and took pictures.
That's awesome.
And I got yelled at.
That's awesome. My favorite joke is, what's the difference between the MTC and prison? And it's in prison you can get visitors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always like to say the difference between MTC and the prison is that you can see the sky. Because you know how they have all the walkways that have the thing over it? I was like, is there sky still? Is there a sky? Can I see the sky, please?
In that room forever. There's also a new Relief Society book that is going to be distributed to women throughout the church for free. Very cool. As the
is
church,
this the book you're in?
No. I wish I was in. Anne Marie, can't say your last name. Osman was raised in Nigeria. Nicole Erickson is a single graphic designer in Utah. Barbara Rockwood is busy raising 5 young children in Washington. At first glance, these women may not have much in common, but as members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, they are connected to each other and millions of women through the Relief Society organization. And the book talks about each of these women. So it's called Daughters in My Kingdom, and it's a history on the Relief Society. So it says that even though we're in the 21st century, you know, much of everything the Relief Society is and stands for is still pretty much the same. And we just want to, they're sending that to, giving it to everyone
cool.
for free.
When do you
Very
get yours?
Very expensive. I don't know.
Soon?
I hope so.
This is kind of cool. I found this and I hope we can just get him on the phone. The head coach of Navy, the football team at Navy, Mormon.
I didn't know. Really? Yeah.
His name is Ken Niumatalolo. Niumatalolo.
It's okay.
Niumatalolo. I got it. Anyway, hopefully we can get in touch with him in the future. Glenn Beck, way to go, Brother Beck. That's all I'll say about that.
Once again.
Hopefully we can get him on the show in the future
we
for
will
sure.
We will get him on the show in the near
and,
future.
That'll
be great.
Oh, this is confirmed. Peter Breinholt in 2 weeks.
Wonderful.
On the when we record it here in a couple weeks, it's about probably 2 episodes away, will be the Cultural Hall visiting with Peter Breinholt. And it's not confirmed, but I feel pretty confident in it that next week's podcast will be the Cultural Hall and the Mormon Defense League.
Awesome.
Mormon Defenders Unite.
All right, that'd be great. The Defense League.
Make
new.
Sure. Yeah. Scott, I think, is his name. Make sure that you friend us on Facebook or like us on Facebook, The Cultural Hall. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. It's called The Cultural Hall. Check it out there. Richie T. Stedman is my name. You can find me on Facebook.
And Lauren Johnson. Good luck finding me on Facebook.
If you friend me and then look at my Lauren Johnson, that's
then you can find me. Yeah.
And then also you can follow us at The Cultural Hall on Twitter. So make sure you do that. Stay in touch with us. If you have ideas for guests, there's a way to get in contact with us on theculturalhall.com. Or, you know, you can get in touch with us through The Cultural Hall Facebook page and give us an idea of guest. Or if you're a guest that would like to be on the show, make sure you reach out to us that way. I kind of found a cool way that I think we could end this.
Oh, yeah?
Tell me what you think.
Okay. I will.
I know. We'll be saving a seat for you on the back row and then of the Cultural Hall. So we'll be saving a seat for you
on the back row
of the Cultural Hall, but we say it together. See how that goes?
Okay.
We'll be saving a seat for you. That's me. Or if you I'll say on the back row and then we say of the Cultural Hall.
Oh, we say of the Cultural Hall. Okay. So you start.
Okay. So we'll be saving a seat for you
on the back row of the cultural hall. You think? I really do want to listen to it. I think it could be cool.
What we just said?
Yeah.
We'll be seeing you.
On the back row.
Oh, jeez.
We'll be seeing you.
On the back row
of the cultural hall.
Yeah. Maybe
I don't know if saying it together at the end is... Maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
What?
I like it.
Yeah, we'll try it.
I like it.
Well, maybe not. I want to have a catchphrase, so it's like, we'll be seeing you on the back row.
I agree.
Maybe just we'll be seeing you on the back row.
In the cultural hall.
No, maybe not that at all. Maybe not the cultural hall at all. Maybe it's we'll be seeing you on the back row.
Oh, yeah, I like that. That was good. I do like that more.
Okay.
I've got a bail.
All right.